let go of him, and the snitch slid all the way down against the table, until his ass hit the floor. He scampered away to a corner of the tavern. Catalan wasn't done, though. Two men and a woman stood when they saw that Barrick's situation was over. They were dressed like normal commoners with linen shirts, furred coats, jackets, and wide trousers. But Ed recognized their boots as belonging to the Thieves Guild.
"So this is why Catalan pays so much attention to shoes," he thought.
She faced the three interlopers.
"And you? Am I here, Pris?"
The woman, Pris, had her hands hidden behind her back.
"Dunno, Cat. Are you going to try to take on the three of us like you did with the snitch?"
Next to her, the other two thieves slid their hands slowly toward their waists.
"I don't think you have enough hands."
"All right,"
Kess muttered.
"That's my cue."
She headed toward Catalan.
"Actually, she has more than enough, so listen to the lady, asshole."
Many people, including Catalan, chuckled at hearing her being called a lady, which soured Kess's mood even further. Pris scowled, and her friends' hands froze in their path to their hidden weapons, but didn't retreat.
"So what happens now? Can't get all stabbity-stab in the folly. You know the rules."
She nodded toward the bar. Ed followed her gaze and noticed the barkeep calmly tossing and catching a small polished rock while observing the scene with poignant disinterest. The rock was carved with bright blue lines that formed a glyph, which was becoming very familiar to Ed.
Fireball rune.
The rune looked out of place in the hands of the man, an overweight and short guy who had every inch of exposed skin covered by a carpet of coarse hair. His beard was as thick as a carpet and was just a few inches away from covering his face entirely.
"Take it outside," said the barkeep, "and solve it like civilized arseholes. Or don't. I'm just itching for an excuse to change the furniture anyway."
He snapped his fingers, and the rune disappeared in midair. He made a nonchalant flourish with his other hand, produced the rune, and tossed it again. Pris and her thieves moved their hands away from their weapons. Kess sighed and put away her sword.
"Know what? Whatever's going on between you and Brandon is none of my business,"
Pris told Catalan.
"Just keep the rest of the guild out of it. If you're hanging out with adventurers now, well, that's who you're called, darling."
She sat down again and gestured at the barkeep.
"Another round, Max. Put it on Cat's tab, will you?"
Catalan snorted, shrugged, and clapped Kess on the shoulder as a thank you. Together they went to Ed's table. The thief plopped down into an empty seat and put away her coat, earning obvious stares from Alder. The rest of the tavern hurried back to their own business, mostly drinking and trying their best to look mysterious in their own corners.
"So,"
Catalan cheerfully told Ed,
"welcome to Undercity, the most exciting place in all of Styravos, swear to the gods."
Chapter 16. Under City Harbor. Ed and Catalan exchanged updates and made sure that Alder and Kess were on the same page as they were. Catalan had been on the down low for a while, putting feelers through the guild and all her contacts to try to find out anything concerning Brandon or Nikolai.
"It's harder than it sounds,"
she confided.
"I can't mention anything about the Wraith or it will cause a panic. Or worse, the Inquisition hears about it. Then we're all fucked."
From what little she had heard, Brandon was still hanging with the Thieves Guild, but showed himself little, and the guild was beginning to suspect he was funneling their resources out and using them for his private enterprises, which was a kind of way of saying he was stealing from them. No one knew where Nikolai was, and the beggars that informed Catalan refused to trod the streets like they used to, at least not around the port. Someone was hunting them, and many that ventured out alone at night never returned to their hideouts and refuges. Catalan had only begun looking into the disappearances, in case they were connected with the Wraith and Nikolai, and then she had heard about Ed's arrival in the Folly.
"I heard that Karmic has been non-stop about you,"
Catalan told Kess.
"A hot elf chick," end quote, "who kicked the ever-loving shit out of him."
The thief pointed at her own ribcage.
"He's showing everyone the spot where you hit him with that power strike gambit."
Kess shrugged, like a humble artist trying to act like her recent masterpiece wasn't that big of a deal.
"Wasn't that big a deal,"
she said.
"Seems like you have an admirer." Ed told her.
Stranger things have happened,
said Kes. She sipped at her ale.
But I don't think he's my type.
Then Ed told Catalan about their encounter with Brandon at the causeway, about the part he hoped she'd play in selling Andrina's beer, and the spiderling he had planted in Karmic's armor. As he explained how he had kept the two spiderlings hidden inside his shirt, the other three people squirmed in their seats.
Oh, come on, he said when he saw their reactions. We've been living with them for more than a month. It's enough time to get used to them being around.
Still, said Alder.
Yuck!
Ed shook his head in playful exaggeration and tapped the table a couple times. The second spiderling timidly left its hidden place inside his sleeve and headed for his plate where it proceeded to feast on the leftovers. Catalan's eye twitched, and Alder moved a bit away from him.
The plan is, if Karmic makes contact with Brandon at any point, Ed said, my spiderling will follow Brandon and find out where he's hiding. With any luck, that leads us to Nikolai, and he leads us to your... to the Wraith.
You can say your father,
Catalan said.
I don't have daddy issues. I just didn't like the guy when he was alive is all. Now that he's dead, I like him even less.
With a wisdom worthy of his 15 points in spirit, Ed chose to refrain from pointing out that she had just mentioned the very definition of daddy issues.
The way I see it, everyone has some baggage, Ed thought. At least mine doesn't involve an undead family member with a life-draining aura trying to drink my blood.
It almost made his beef with Charon seem tame by comparison. Alder nodded a bit too energetically. Before their arrival into Undercity, Ed had gotten the others up to speed on Catalan's relation to Torst and Torst's relation to the war that had ravaged Steravos for 5 years and ended with the country under the heel of Haleges. All because Torst had feared aging so much that he chose to pact with the Dark, and because he had managed to kill a minor Haligian prince and a duke.
It's chilling to know that the actions of one crazy asshole can have such an effect on two countries. Maybe an entire world, Ed thought.
He'd have loved to tell himself that it was an Ivalis thing, but he knew damn well it wasn't.
Maybe it's a humanity thing. The same in all the worlds out there with people like Torst, Nikolai, and Ione. Maybe even people like me.
More importantly,
Catalan went on, oblivious of the dangerous waters that Ed was mentally treading.
Assuming we find the Wraith, what are we going to do to kill it?
It was a welcome change of subject.
Silver weapons, Ed said, and raised a finger to keep count. A squad of Kaftar armed with bows.
He raised another finger.
Blessed arrows coated with holy water, another two fingers, vitality potions, and runes.
He ran out of fingers, so he struck his open palm with his fist.
If we find the Wraith before it finds us, that should be enough to take it out.
Alder nodded again, but both Kes and Catalan looked unsure.
What else can we throw at it? Ed thought.
The Haunt's resources weren't infinite. If the Wraith and Nikolai did them all a favor and kept hiding for another month, then maybe they could better prepare themselves, but he couldn't bank his strategy on his enemies making a mistake.
You are forgetting about the life-draining aura,
said Catalan.
That's a Wraith's main power, and if we leave it unchecked, we risk disaster. What if Torst gets into the Kaftar's ranks and raises them as specters?
Ed sighed and massaged his temples with his fingertips. That aura was enough to give any man nightmares.
Ideally, we'd shut it down somehow. Levy may come up with a way. She's the undead expert.
As soon as he returned to the dungeon, he'd visit her and brainstorm for ideas.
Maybe a magic circle, Alder suggested, to keep the Wraith standing in place. Warlocks use them all the time to talk with demons from the Netherworld. At least that's what Chazen did.
Catalan's ears perked up.
Warlock Chazen? Wasn't he one of Kael Arpadol's minions?
She gave a low, surprised whistle.
It seems I'm colliding with dark celebrities here.
Don't call our bard a celebrity or he'll believe you,
Kes said. Then she shook her head.
We can't use the magic circle since we have no way of getting the Wraith inside. And Ed's strategy involves many resources we don't have at the moment. Like the Kaftar, or the silver, or the money.
She counted each of them the same way Ed had.
That's where our alcohol plan comes in, Ed said, and glanced at Catalan. If you can sell it.
I can sell anything. For a fee,
she said.
She grinned at the other three and made a dismissive gesture with her hand.
But business comes later. First, I want to see the loot you got from Karmic and the others.
She passed her hand all over the table to clean it of dirt.
Go on, don't be shy. I bet you need help to figure out what you got anyway.
Kes stared a question in Ed's direction. He shrugged and took out his thief's belt.
No sense in distrusting Catalan at this point.
Kes went along, and Alder followed suit. Catalan spread the items from the belts all over the table, ordering them by form and function. All the belts had similar contents, although some had more than others, due to use.
These,
Catalan said, her hand pointing at three leather cases,
are Thieves Guild official lockpicks. You don't want to be caught with these by either the Watch or the Guild. And since you have no idea how to use them, I'll happily buy them from you.
She searched her bag and took out two pink coins shaped like triangles, which she put under the three cases.
Are you ripping us off?
Kes asked, her eyes narrowing.
Two Vifaras for expert-make lockpicks seems like a steal.
Catalan flashed her a grin and turned to Alder.
Alder, dear, tell me what class appears right under my name on my stats sheet.
It says thief,
Alder said, in that dreamy tone that indicated he'd have done anything she asked of him.
And what's a thief way of life?
They steal from people,
Alder said. He made it sound like praise, like Catalan's job was to feed and bathe orphans. Catalan nodded in approval.
Exactly. Of course I'm stealing from you guys.
She tapped the leather cases with her fingertip.
Stealing is what I do. But look at it this way. No one in the city is going to buy these lockpicks from you because they're thieving tools. You'd have to go to an unaligned fence and you don't know any. Hell, you may get stabbed just by asking around for one. You can't sell the lockpicks and you can't use them, so your only options are throwing them in the canal or taking my two by fours and calling it a day.
Kes exhaled with indignation.
So you're saying we should be happy about you ripping us off?
That's why I'm so good at my job,
Catalan said, and gave her a thumbs up.
You're so smart,
Alder whispered, smiling to himself. Ed chuckled and took the Vifaras. Being a dungeon lord, he wasn't much concerned with locked doors. If he really wanted to get around one, he'd simply make a tunnel, or just have his drones eat it. Next, Catalan pointed at three pairs of slender hooks each made of steel, and the three bundles of white cord under them.
These are part of a climbing kit,
she said.
They are useful for climbing short, unsecured buildings.
She stared at a point above Ed and the others' heads, the way Ivalians did when reading a character sheet.
My recommendation? Since neither of you has tumble or acrobatics or anything of the like, don't use them. You'll only cripple yourselves.
She offered a Vifara for each. Kes and Alder accepted the offer, but Ed kept his because it was simply too cool to sell.
One minor healing potion,
Catalan went on, pointing at one of two copper vials.
You obviously want to keep it, but know that it's worth about 10 Vifaras. Yes, it's expensive, but you'd be surprised how little you care about price while bleeding out.
She pointed at the other vial.
This is a minor agility potion. It's used in case you have to make a run for it.
Alder grabbed that vial and placed it on his side of the table.
I'm keeping this one, he said, because I can combo it with my nimble feet.
No, you won't,
Kes chided him.
You want to move faster than the rest of us? You'd leave us behind and we couldn't benefit from your magic.
She handed the vial over to Ed.
My fighting style has little use for agility, but Ed can use it with his improved reflexes.
While the bard grumbled to himself, Catalan pointed at a group of clay balls about the size of big marbles.
Smoke bombs,
she said.
Useful for a getaway.
She withdrew from her pouch a small bunch of shiny slivers made of a porous material, reminiscent of gunpowder.
You pinch the bomb's tops with one of these to create a spark.
Each of them grabbed two of the bombs and a pinch of slivers, which were very fragile. The rest of the items Catalan described quickly. Chalk sticks, incredibly useful with a bit of creativity. A bag of salt to safely short-circuit some magical traps, and some empty vials to store valuable liquids. After she was done, Ed and Kes put the items back into the belts.
You should dump those,
Catalan said.
The belts, I mean. It's obvious who you got them from, and it'll get you in trouble. I know a guy who can make similar belts on the cheap, so next time you come to Undercity, head to the Folly, and the barkeep will have them in store for you.
Thanks, Ed said. That's nice of you.
Catalan snorted and grabbed three of the Vifaras she had previously left on the table.
Cheap isn't the same as free, after all.
Then she pointed at Ed's new green cape.
That was Karmic's, wasn't it?
She gestured at him to hand it over so she could take a better look. She studied the fabric closely.
He had it enchanted, the asshole. He always claimed to be broke whenever we played Deckers. Let's see.
Her fingers flew across the seams, which were sewn with silver thread.
Should be somewhere around here.
Her fingers stopped when she reached the button around the cape's neck. She pushed, and for a brief instant, Ed could swear he saw the air around the cape ripple before it went back to normal.
What's the enchantment for?
Asked Alder with wide eyes.
Will it make Ed invisible? Can he fly with it? Teleport around shadows? What?
Catalan chuckled and shook the cape around. The fabric made no sound.
It's for sneaking,
she explained.
Absorbs all sounds coming from the wearer for up to an hour per day. Karmic carried it around because he wears studded leather armor, which is noisier than the lighter version.
She handed the cape back to Ed.
Ah.
Alder couldn't hide the disappointment from his voice.
I was hoping for invisibility. That always makes for the best stories.
If any of us could afford that kind of magic item,
said Catalan,
we'd be fat and retired in Elytra.
Once identifying the loot was over and done with, the four of them kept a comfortable silence as they each finished their drinks and enjoyed the warmth of the fireplace.
It'd be easy to live like this, Ed thought with a sudden pang of nostalgia.
His eyebrows rose. What was he nostalgic about?
This is what being an adventurer feels like, he realized. Sitting in taverns, splitting the loot of our recent victories, drinking and gossiping until late at night, warming ourselves next to the fire until we're ready for the next adventure.
It was the kind of stuff he had lived vicariously via video games and tabletop games all of his life. Sure, fighting for his life in the slick causeway hadn't been enjoyable in the least, but now, with the fireplace crackling and a cold mug in his hand, it was hard to remember what he had been so upset about.
I'm nostalgic because this could have been my fate, he decided. If any other being beside Heron had come to see me that day after Ryan's office, I could have been an adventurer.
It was so easy to imagine. Kess would have been the tank, Alder would have handled the buffs, Levy was the mage, and Catalan was obviously the thief. Ed's place would have been right in the middle of the group, a mixture between fighter and mage, ready to fill any weakness that sprang in the battle formation. They would have traveled all across Ivalis, meeting strange people, surviving dangers, growing in power and riches, coming upon arcane secrets, and all those other wonderful things that adventurers did. Ed chuckled and shook his head to clear his mind of daydreams.
Ah, nothing to it, he thought.
His gaze met Kess and Alder's, and he could have sworn they were thinking the same as he was. He was probably projecting, though.
The grass is always greener on the other side, he decided.
How many adventurers would have given their right arm for the powers he had been bestowed? Or to have a place they could call home? He was sure that, if he ever talked to an adventurer, they would point out the many hardships in their lives that he couldn't even imagine. Maybe they'd look at the haunt's heated walls during wintertime and envy those. Maybe they'd envy the companionship. His haunt, after all, had never been empty. Wouldn't ever be, as long as he had a say about it. He patted his legs to help with circulation.
Well, that's enough resting for the day, he said.
His voice jerked everyone out of their own private contemplations.
What are we going to do about Andrina's beer?
Catalan smirked and set aside her ale. The fire and the alcohol had given her nose and cheeks a kind of shine that made her look downright lovely.
Ah, time for business, then. Very well.
She leaned forward on her chair and lowered her voice, forcing the other three to inch forward too, making a sort of impromptu conspiracy circle.
I'll introduce you to my good friend Oscor.
The warehouses next to the docks were a series of wide and low buildings made of brick and limestone. The salt in the air made their paint flake and fall in several spots. The streets surrounding the warehouses meshed well with the flaked aspect of the buildings. They were dirty, unpaved, covered in mud mixed with snow, and the few carriages that crossed them had the drivers spur the horses so that they'd remain here as short a time as possible. Catalan brought them to a sort of tour around the warehouse district, because she wanted to make sure they weren't being followed by Pris or the other members of the guild. They started close to the docks, where the smell of fish was overpowering, and small mountains of silver herrings rose in mats next to fishing boats painted in bright colors. A small army of sailors and dock workers either loaded barrels of fish into nearby carts or took merchandise out of other carts and hauled it next to the bigger merchant ships that splattered the horizon next to the wooden structures of the dock. About half of the dock's population was humans or elves, and the other half was a mixture of races Ed hadn't met before, but which were nonetheless recognizable. Minotaurs, dwarfs, gnomes, a couple old kaftars with graying fur, and even a formic covered in blue and gold chains. Some ships had their cargo loaded on board by complex machinery made out of pulleys, loaded weights, and wooden and iron scaffolding. It reminded Ed of trebuchets, although their function was more like that of Earth's cranes. The amount of carts and carriage traffic was staggering. Catalan had rented a cart of her own so they could move the beer barrels, and it would have been almost impossible to distinguish it from the dozens, maybe even hundreds, of similar carts that made their way along the overloaded roads. The almost skeletal donkey that pulled the cart had had its legs covered with cloth in case it had to deal with snow, but the roads were kept free of it by virtue of the sheer amount of traffic and the groups of sailors hauling snow into the waters below, never giving the snowflakes enough time to bunch up. As he moved among the carts, the sailors and the workers, Ed distinguished a third kind of person. They had to be spellcasters, because they wore yellow tunics under their orange coats and had cowled capes covering half their faces. Their chests were loaded with heavy golden chains. Heavy rings with rubies and emeralds decorated their hands, and some of them carried staffs almost twice as long as themselves. Most of the staffs were carved out of wood, but a couple were marble and had crystal orbs at the tip, glinting red and blue in the sunlight.
"Diviners,"
Catalan told him.
"They work for His Majesty's treasury, checking that no one is smuggling anything into the city."
She pulled the donkey's reins to lead the cart away from the main street and onto one of the minor ones that intersected it.
"We better keep our distance. We don't want any of their detection spells triggering by accident because we got too close."
One of the diviners sniffed the air with a suspicious scowl. Ed and the others hurried to get out of sight. The side streets were populated by taverns and whorehouses, and packs of sailors roamed their streets, many too drunk to walk straight. Ed glanced at the sky above. It was sunset. Along with the sailors were the prostitutes. Their faces were caked with thick makeup, and their figures were accentuated by tight bodices. A few of them sparkled, like tiny fireworks were going off all the time around their heads. Kes explained that they wore earrings enchanted with minor illusion spells. Armed with that knowledge, Ed identified many other spells. One woman was dressed as a dryad, and her skirt created a constant stream of mist that gave her a mystical air. Another, judging from the way the air rippled around her, was using some kind of charisma-enhancing aura. Some passerby stopped in front of her, mesmerized, and had to be dragged by his better-spirited friends. He saw many fake pointed ears, elven-like, and even a blonde girl with fake feathered wings lazily threading behind her back. That sight earned a couple choice names and obscene gestures from Kes, which the girl ignored with surprising dignity. Not everything involved whores or booze. Hustlers dressed in tunics and fake gold clogged up the foot traffic by performing magical tricks around small tables. Ed had no idea if he was witnessing real magic or the other, more mundane kind. A man with a battered top hat launched a flurry of doves out of his sleeve, and the birds flew circles around the delighted crowd. A little kid used the chance to cut the purse of a distracted sailor and disappear into the crowd. Ed kept close tabs on his belt after that. A priest of a minor light deity threatened fire and brimstone to everyone close enough to hear. The man was bald and dressed in sackcloth, but he stood over his barrel as if he were a king chiding his subjects. As they passed, he called Alder a sinner and a fornicator, much to Alder's confusion. Two rival bards tried to steal the other's audiences by raising the complexity of their performances. From the sound of it, they were improvising the lyrics of their songs, and it involved the rival bard and either a group of horned spiders or having a batblin for a mother. Both crowds were slowly merging into a very pleased one, and they goaded the bards along into a paroxysm of musical genius. herbalists and witch doctors, either real or fake, there was no way to tell, announced elixirs that could simulate love, vitalize a limp dick, heal syphilis, and allow the consumers to evade taxes. Many men and women approached them and left with crystal vials whose function they were very careful not to reveal. Three sailors fought outside a tavern. One of them stabbed another with a small knife in the belly, then ran for an alley before the third man could catch him. A roaming attorney walked briskly over to the man bleeding in the curb and handed him his calling card as the watch ran their way, shouldering their way through the bystanders. Ed was a bit surprised by the watch showing up at all. He had expected them not to be anywhere nearby. They wore half-plate emblazoned with a golden lion that Alder identified as Halagee's coat of arms. Half of the watchmen's bodies were covered by a sort of red cape, threaded with gold, that was probably very impressive when clean, but most were baked in grime and mud and probably worse. The street was littered with horse dung. They wore leather skirts reinforced with mail, similar to a Roman centurion, but with steel-tipped boots instead of sandals.
"This goes on every day?"
Ed asked after he had to reject the advances of a woman in her 50s disguised as an elven queen. He had to turn down the advances of the elven king afterward.
"Each week,"
Kes said, still grumpy from her encounter with the woman disguised as an avian.
"The sailors have a couple days of leave after they're done loading their ships, so they spend most of their pay here. At the end of the leave, they're out of money and must take another 6-month contract with the same ship they left, and so on for the rest of their lives, until they die from some sickness that got through their resist disease."
She said so with disgust, but a tremor in her lip revealed a certain fondness. Ed noticed that a few of the roaming groups were soldiers and mercenaries. Next to their cart, a ranger made a trained monkey vault across a series of obstacles, pirouette across the air like it had wings, and land in front of Catalan. The monkey offered her a blue flower. She laughed and accepted it, and gave the monkey a couple of small rings, of the kind that the villages of Steravos used instead of coins. The monkey returned to its ranger and tossed the loot into a worn-out boot. The blue flower ended up in Catalan's hair.
"All right,"
said Catalan as she led them to yet another side street.
"Try to look poor, will you?"
She covered her hair with her cowl, so Ed did the same. Alder glanced about nervously and hid his small coin purse inside his shirt. Every side street had smaller, unpaved roads, like they were traversing a giant's arteries and flowing through smaller veins at every turn. Soon the roads were barely big enough for their cart to fit. The passers-by changed, too, a subtle change that Ed didn't notice until the crimson colors of sunset changed into the purples of early nighttime. The costumed working gals became older and ragged, with cold, calculating eyes that followed the group as they passed. Then the costumes disappeared altogether, replaced by rough sack cloth or tattered linen. The happy, drunk sailors were replaced by a rougher sort, grim-faced. Most hid their faces under their hoods and walked the shadows, avoiding the moonlight like it was poison. Men and women covered head to toe in furred coats stood at each corner, warming their hands over improvised fires. Under their coats, black leather armor gained an evil tint with the firelight, which also lighted brief flashes of daggers curved like fangs and rusty knuckle dusters hanging from hemp collars. Ed noticed that Kes's hands never strayed far from her scabbard, although she pretended not to see these new characters. Rats as big as wolves scurried along dirty alleyways, always remaining in the corner of Ed's eyes and vanishing when he turned to search for them, leaving only their deformed shadows as they fought with each other over scraps. A man with a sea of scars crisscrossing his scalp sold vials filled with a black, tar-like substance. He had a small cauldron boiling over a fire in front of him. Another one carried a heavy chain joined to the manacles of three batblins with gray fur in front of him. The sight brought forth a pang of fury in Ed, and his hand hovered over his short sword, but the hostile, almost feral expression of the batblins made him doubt for a second. And then the man and the trio were gone.
"Where are you bringing us?"
Kes asked Catalan, not bothering to hide the distrust in her voice.
"Are you scared?"
Catalan turned, eyebrow raised, and pointed at Ed with nonchalance.
"Our friend here belongs to a kind of dark much worse than anything you may find in the slums."
"Are they aware of that?"
Ed asked, glancing at the black-clad figures around them. Catalan winced.
"Good point,"
She grinned nervously. The taverns were replaced by homes made of rotting wood planks or a sort of black clay that made the houses look as if they were melting or made by the hands of a giant toddler. Their roofs were made out of straw. Some had small dirt gardens with one or two dead trees growing along crabgrass and dry shrubbery. Men and women as old as mountains sat in front of their doorways, smoking pipes that exuded purple smoke. Their expressions were dead and didn't react to Ed's group at all.
Pixie dust,
Catalin told him, nodding at the small cloud of smoke floating over her wrinkled face and her straw hat.
Nasty shit, very addicting.
Ed could have sworn he had misheard.
Pixie dust? You mean the stuff that makes you fly if you have happy thoughts?
It makes you feel as if you could fly,
Catalin said.
Makes you feel as if you were a kid again, but better. You relive your childhood, except it isn't exactly your childhood. The colors are brighter, the memories are more vivid. It brings your mind to a world that's much better than the real one and leaves you there. Every time you smoke the dust, the real world dims a bit more. The food tastes a bit more like ash each time, and you feel less and less. Eventually, the addict's a little different from vegetables.
She made a stabbing motion with her arm.
You could prod their guts with a hot iron and they wouldn't realize.
Why is it called pixie dust?
Alder asked.
It was introduced in Undercity by foreign sailors from Akathun,
Catalin said.
People hunt pixies there. They drain them, leave the bodies to dry and grind them into dust.
She shivered and took a long swig out of a flask she had hanging on her belt.
It's selling like crazy, despite the Watcher's efforts to eradicate it. The Thieves' Guild is having a hard time dealing with the Akathunians distributing it.
Killing fairies? What a bunch of scumbags,
muttered Kes. She looked eager to give the Akathunians a piece of her mind. Ed's imagination produced an image of a pixie, the kind that starred in movies for little girls back on Earth, having her lifeless body slowly crushed inside a mortar. He shuddered. Catalin handed him her flask, which he accepted gratefully. The black-clad figures around almost every corner, the Akathunians themselves, watched with gray, merciless eyes. Soon afterward, Ed's group arrived at a wide house, windowless, whose planks were almost falling apart. It was encircled by a small fence, and a road of cobblestones reached toward a door made of wood and reinforced with rusty iron.
This is our destination,
Catalin told the others.
I'd like to promise you that there's no danger here, but it'd be a lie.
She made sure all her knives slid easily in and out of their scabbards.
If you go inside, have it be of your own volition.
Alder gulped loudly.
Can we stay outside?
Sure,
Catalin said.
Someone has to stand guard over the merchandise. Has to be someone strong and intimidating. Well, the good folk may decide to slit your throat and steal the cart.
She made for the fence and opened it while gesturing at the entrance.
What do you think, Alder? Are you up to stand watch?
Alder gulped again, looked around, and turned to Kes with a nervous smile. The mercenary sighed, checked her sword like Catalin had, and rested her back against the cart.
Try not to get killed without me,
she said. Ed, Alder, and Cat headed inside. Chapter 17. The Smugglers. That reinforced door was the most solid part of the house. As Ed got closer, he saw a small slit open and close in the middle of it. Catalin reached the door first and knocked three times.
Oscar!
She called.
It's Catalin! Open up!
She knocked another two times.
I brought you some business!
She stepped away. Nothing happened for a bit, but she seemed not to care, and even flashed Ed a reassuring smile. But she couldn't hide the slight tremor in her hands.
Whoever is inside, Ed asked her in a whisper, do you think we can take them?
Men with 800 experience points can get killed by people with a quarter of that,
Catalin told him.
An inch of steel through the heart cares very little for your talent choice, in most cases.
She raised her fist toward the door, clearly unsure if she should knock again.
Oscar and his ilk may not have much in the way of experience points, but they make up for it with sheer meanness.
Ed scowled and steeled himself. He couldn't avoid being unnerved by the hostile, unfamiliar slums. So he used the adrenaline to his benefit, to sharpen his senses, to make his body be ready for a fight at a moment's notice. To expect anything. He opened his mouth to say something reassuring to Catalan, but the thief flashed him another smile. She had a strange glint in her eye.
Isn't it exciting? This is why I love this damn city. Never gets boring.
Ed closed his mouth. There was a grinding of iron, and the door opened. There was a crossbow aimed straight at them. Ed almost activated his reflexes out of instinct, but caught himself in time, because Catalan's body language hadn't changed.
Hey, Oscar,
she said, raising her arms up and showing her empty palms.
Long time no see. Have you lost weight?
Hey, Catalan, the owner of the crossbow said. I thought I told you I didn't want to see you around here again.
Oscar was a dwarf, almost as wide as he was tall, with powerful arms that looked capable of wrestling a bull. He was dressed in battered rags and mismatching pieces of armor, iron, leather, and chainmail. His long black beard was unkempt and badly covered in an array of burn scars around half his face. His right eye was milky gray and had a long scar crossing it. He reeked of sweat and moldy cheese. His crossbow was aimed at Catalan, but he didn't seem worried about Ed and Alder's presence. Ed realized why very quickly. The crossbow carried a sort of mechanized loader at the end of it, made of pulleys and small springs.
He can probably put a bolt through each of us in a second or two, should he want to, Ed decided.
At this distance, he'd barely have time to use his reflexes, and he definitely couldn't save Catalan if Oscar shot her first.
Surely you can't still be angry about losing that card game,
Catalan said, exuding smiles and harmlessness in a way that would have made a bard proud.
It was all a big misunderstanding anyway, right?
The dwarf's grim complexion darkened as his face squinted in fury.
A misunderstanding, you say?
His crossbow swiveled left and right. Next to Ed, Alder followed the movement like he was hypnotized by it.
You and that bitch, Press, cheated on Deckers. You didn't even give us our money back.
The crossbow stopped right in front of Ed, which he considered a very unwelcome development.
And now you bring strange mercenaries to my home. You should be ashamed of yourself, Catalan. There's too much of your father left in you, I'd say. Perhaps I should get you out with a bolt to your guts.
Catalan's harmless smile was replaced by a dark, dangerous scowl, which made Ed sure a fight was inevitable.
You could have started it when the crossbow wasn't aimed at my chest.
He tensed his legs, ready to dodge out of the line of fire. But the scowl passed. Catalan shrugged and shook her head.
Look, I'm sorry you think I cheated at cards. Truth be told, I'm a thief, so really, what did you expect?
Oscar grunted something nasty, but she went on.
Trust me, I wouldn't be back if I didn't have a good reason. These strange men? They're entrepreneurs, Oscar.
Her hands made a flourish like entrepreneurs was a sort of magic word. Judging from Oscar's pensive expression, maybe it was.
They're here in Undercity with a very lucrative business opportunity. The kind of opportunity where you don't have to pay taxes, isn't that right?
She glanced at Alder, who had the highest charisma. For a second, Alder just stood there, scared and very out of place. Ed repressed a grimace and tried to behave as if he had utter confidence in the bard's skills. Alder straightened his shoulders and transformed in front of Ed's very eyes, almost as if by the effects of an illusion spell. His trembling lips became a disdainful scowl, a raised eyebrow gave him a confident, arrogant air, and he threw the dwarf a glance over so nasty that any high school drama queen would have turned green with envy.
Lucrative is the right word, Miss Locksmith, but I must admit this man does not seem capable enough to handle an operation of the scale we have in mind.
He turned to Catalan as if the crossbow wasn't even there, then made a disdainful gesture at the house and the dwarf's clothes.
He looks more fit for the loony bin than for distributing our product.
Oscar grunted, his face darkening again. But Catalan smiled apologetically at Alder as if she wanted to reassure him.
Oscar is famous in the right circles for knowing all the right people. He's the right man for the job.
Her eyes darted to the dwarf.
if he wants to take it.
Hmm.
The crossbow faltered at a middle point between Alder and Catalan, as if Oscor couldn't decide who to shoot first. In the end, he settled for no one. He lowered the crossbow and stepped to the side.
Come in. Let's talk.
Catalan nodded, like she had expected this result from the very beginning, and went inside without waiting for Alder or Ed. The two of them exchanged a worried glance.
It's too late to change our minds, Ed thought.
He stepped into the darkness. Ed had never been inside a drug den before. But there's a first time for everything. He followed Oscor and Catalan through a carpeted corridor where furniture lay trashed and forgotten. The few remaining curtains that still covered the walls were marred by burns and slashes, and were half-eaten by moths. They passed through several doorless rooms, and Ed caught glimpses of the house's inhabitants. Gnomes in tattered robes slept in straw bunks with bone syringes and other paraphernalia strewn next to them. Dwarves with vacant stares watched Ed pass. The rooms were put together without rhyme or reason, and they had been added at different points in time, Ed suspected, by either Oscor or one of his friends. One small chamber had its roof caved in, and no one had bothered to fix it, so the debris just lay there, with the black sky above pouring through the opening like a flood.
"What is this place?"
whispered Alder. Ed remembered that the bard had grown up in Elytra, as close to an idyllic place as there was in Ivalis. A pair of rats hurried next to them without fear and headed for distant stairs.
"Don't be quick to judge, Master Merchant," said Oscor without turning to look at them. "This is a refuge. The only place most of my good friends can call home."
He headed for the warm light of a fireplace and brought them to a circular chamber with a sturdy table at the middle. Straw sofas and other mismatched furniture, Ed realized they had to have been stolen from different places, lay at random spots. Dwarves with beards as unkempt as Oscor's watched him arrive. Unlike the junkies near the house's entrance, their eyes were keen, and their arms as muscled and strong as Oscor's. Everyone was armed, either with knives or short swords or axes. All in all, there were 6 dwarves and 3 gnomes, lightly armored. The gnomes were smaller than the dwarves, slender, with inquisitive faces and eyes that protruded a tad too far over their long noses.
"At ease, everyone," called Oscor.
Hands that had been reaching for the handle of their weapons now discreetly relaxed, but not entirely.
"Very well. Catalan, Master Merchants," he said as he pulled out a small wooden chair from under the table and plopped down.
He let out a sigh as he did so, like the effort of walking had exhausted him.
"Convince us."
Catalan whispered a greeting to a few of the people there. To Ed's surprise, some returned the greeting and seemed genuinely pleased to see her, but no one dared speak aloud with Oscor's smoldering glare on them. The thief sat on a sturdy chair made to fit dwarven buttocks, did her best to get comfortable, and started talking. She told Oscor about the 4 barrels and about how Ed and his company could make many more if these sold. She handed him her flask so he could taste the product, which he did with a neutral expression. As she talked, Ed took measure of the situation. It looked like their lives were in Oscor's hands, because they were severely outnumbered. It didn't please him one bit, feeling so vulnerable. His mind tried to come up with an escape plan in case everything went to shit, one that hopefully didn't involve using his evil eye or dark magic.
"No way we can take them all, not even with Kes here," he thought, while Catalan proposed distribution routes and suggested the amount they'd have to spend in bribes. "The space is too confined, and we don't know the house's layout. Our best bet is to have Alder use his bardic utterance to run away as fast as we can and maybe set something on fire on our way out."
He glanced at the fireplace, which was too far away to be of any use. His smoke bomb would have to do instead, as a distraction.
"See? My friends here can compete with the brewers,"
Catalan was saying.
"I'm not so sure. Their booze can't be cheaper than the brewers' guilds," said Oscor,
scratching a chin invisible under thick strands of beard.
"Because they buy the wheat from the treasury at a discount, and the treasury gets it for free from the villagers, as a tax for use of the land."
"Doesn't matter,"
Catalan said,
We still beat them on price, because we don't have to pay one coin to the treasury for every two we make.
Oscor grumbled to himself. He stared at Catalan's flask, then took another sip.
It's decent. Good, even. A bit too tame for my taste. But then again, everything tastes tame in this forsaken human country.
He put the flask down.
This whole deal itches me the wrong way, though. You fail me, Catalan. If it's true your friends here can bypass the walls, that's good. But hiding the barrels, once the treasury sniffs something is afoul, is going to be expensive.
We'd have to move a massive amount of booze into the city to make up for it.
Alder intervened, still wearing his arrogant mask.
I assure you, we can do massive.
Oscor's lip twitched, and a nervous whispering extended through the chamber.
That worries me too. A mysterious Heligian bard and an adventurer from God's nowhere.
He pointed at Ed.
Claiming you can magically do what smugglers all over Storevos and Lotia haven't been able to. That's suspicious, I'd say. Very suspicious.
Those hands are inching back toward their weapons again, Ed noticed.
Oscor caught him staring, because the dwarf pounded the table hard to get everyone's attention.
The way I see it, you're either fools or something far nastier than the kind of people me and my friends are used to dealing with,
Oscor said. He made no move for the crossbow, but it was close at hand on the table, still loaded and ready to fire. It worked better as a statement than any word could have.
If you're fools, it'd be idiotic to follow you once the Brewers' Guild is annoyed enough to drive you out of business. You'd break and bring us down with you. And...
Oscor leaned over the table low enough that his beard smoldered under the heat of a nearby candle.
If you're the nastier sort of folk. Well, it may be better to deal with you now and save ourselves the trouble.
One of the gnomes already had her weapon drawn. It was a rapier, excellent for disemboweling taller enemies.
Oscor?
Catalan started. But to Ed, it was clear that the dwarf had reached a decision. Next to Ed, Alder was sweating. His confidence seemed to melt out of him.
Now,
he said.
Let's not do something hasty.
Ed's heart was beating so fast he could barely hear his friend's voice. He knew he had to do something. But what? All his talents were for ending a fight, not preventing it. He couldn't use minor order to make Oscor trust them. It went so far beyond the spell's ruling that he held little doubt about what the result would be.
A mouth opening up in the sky, and suddenly Levy, Kleck, and all the others back in the haunt won't be able to remember me.
The worst part, the part that was driving him insane, was that he had no idea what the stats of Oscor's friends were. He had spent all his life on Earth without relying on character sheets, but a month and a half in Ivalis, and now he couldn't live without his evil eye.
An inch of steel through the heart kills almost anyone, no matter how much experience they have.
Catalan's words resonated inside his head, but it was Nikolai he saw, standing over Lindis's body.
20,
Ed stated, staring at the gnome with the rapier. Oscor's hand was open over his crossbow, ready to snatch it up at a moment's notice.
What did you say?
He asked Ed. Ed ignored him and examined a dwarf close to the gnome. He focused on a spot just above his forehead, like he had seen most Ivalians do.
15 at most, he nodded to himself. That's 35 so far. Not bad. Not bad at all.
He turned to the next dwarf.
Roy!
Oscor faced Alder, who was staring at Ed with the same confused expression as everyone else there.
What's your friend doing?
Trust me, Alder said. I have asked myself that far too many times lately.
Too scrawny,
Ed said, examining a second gnome, who blinked and caressed his knife, unsure of what to make of Ed's words.
10, 45 total.
That's a new talent right there.
Ed licked his lips with satisfaction.
My build could use something to augment agility, to combo with my improved reflexes. I'll have to talk with Kess about adding it to training.
Or you?
Oscor's gray eye was trembling madly in his eye socket, and his nose flared like that of an angry bull.
Are you counting how many experience points we're worth?
Ed dismissed the idea with a gesture of his hand.
Actually, I'm counting how many points you're going to give me.
He added 5 points for the smallest gnome in the group.
If my bard and Catalan survive, I'll probably earn less because they'll take their share of points, but it's still going to send me well over the 400s. Not bad for a day's work, I think.
He stared at Oscor in the eye, using all his willpower to keep a straight, uninterested face. It was like being back in the Haunt's meeting chamber, facing the villagers, trying to convince them that it was in their best self-interest to leave. Except this time, he had to do it without his evil eye, just by his words alone.
25, I'd say. If I start with you. Otherwise, 20? I'm worth at least 40!
Oscor's fist hit the table with enough force to spill Catalan's flask. His companions jumped at the noise, and one of them almost stabbed himself with his own axe.
Not to me, said Ed. I keep killing assholes worth a bunch of points, and objectivity keeps granting me tiny fractions of their total. Seems like I'm not taking enough risks.
He scratched his chin, and then very slowly put his left hand behind his back.
Maybe if I take you on one-armed, that'll give me more.
The nervous whispering in the room became excited, like the buzz of a beehive. Fear and anger were impossible to distinguish, so Ed had to hope he was reading the room correctly. He and Oscor just stared at each other. Ed didn't dare look at anyone else, for fear of breaking the effect he had created. The temptation to glance at Alder or Catalan was almost irresistible.
You're fucking bluffing!
Oscor told him.
My build is very point-intensive, Ed said. Talents for fighting, talents for magic, talents for buffing my allies. Sometimes I feel like I'm all over the place, but somehow it keeps working. Because I keep winning.
Oscor!
One of the other dwarves muttered. Oscor shushed him. A bead of sweat came down next to his blind eye. Ed could almost read his thoughts. The dwarf's eyes were focused at a spot right above Ed's forehead. The dungeon lord knew the only combat talent the dwarf could see was improved reflexes.
The question you're wondering is, Ed thought, what else do I have in my character sheet? And are you willing to risk not knowing?
Oscor's other fist smashed the table, which made Alder and a few others shriek in surprise. Then the dwarf guffawed, cleaning his nose with his finger, and smirked at Ed.
Fucking adventurers! I swear to my ancestors, you're all sick in the head.
He turned to face the gnome with the rapier.
Can you believe this guy, Mathis? Come into our house like it's a dungeon, and he's about to clear it?
The gnome didn't find it funny at all. He stared at Ed with a mixture of fear and anger. Oscor laughed again.
You'd only find shitty loot if you managed to put your sword where your mouth is, adventurer.
Ed shrugged, heart pounding in his chest, his toes curling inside his shoes. He saw Catalan wink at him, like she had never doubted he'd manage the bluff. Ed hadn't been so sure himself.
It was the hidden talents that did the trick. Show a man a dark room, let him see the glint of a knife in a corner, and he'll fill the rest with far worse.
Let me say,
Oscor went on as his laughter died down.
I'm sure we could take you. Probably. But you've got the right attitude to have in this business. Either you'll make it out alive, or you'll get killed in some alleyway before earning the attention of the other guilds. Both options work well for me and my friends.
He snapped his fingers.
Mathis, bring our friend Catalan the money she asked for. It seems she's back in our good graces.
Catalan stood up and patted her legs to regain circulation. As Mathis left the room, he gave her a sour look. The dwarf that Ed had counted as 20 points, on the other hand, flashed her a grin.
What did I tell you?
Catalan told Ed.
Undercity is so exciting.
Your attributes have increased. Charm plus one. Chapter 18. The Call of Adventure. The 4 sacks of money made a dull sound as they hit the table. The galleon's folly was filled with the usual clients, but this time they had helpfully left a corner table open for Ed's group, which made Kess's night as much as the coin. The return trip had been much faster, since they left the barrels in the cart with Oscor's group. In fact, on the way back, they had stopped to make a couple shopping stops to get some much-needed equipment. In a backpack next to Ed's chair was a bag with half a kilo of silver dust, courtesy of the local jeweler. It had cost exactly 22 vifaras, but the trade had to be done under the table. Ed had learned that vifaras, being Lotian currency, were illegal to use in Undercity. The official coin was the Aureus, which was the coin of Haligis, but only good-standing citizens and merchants used it. The treasury diviners had spells which worked better on Aureas than on Vifaras, because the Lotians added a degree of magical protection against Haligian scrying, for obvious reasons. Thus, the Vifara was the coin of the thief and the criminal. And, as of tonight, it was the official coin of the haunt.
"How much did we make?"
Kess asked. She stole a glance around to ensure the rest of the tavern was minding their own business.
"The dwarves bought each barrel for 40 vifaras," Ed said happily.
Along with the silver, they had bought thick, furred coats for the three of them, and another one for Levy, as well as a new pair of boots for Ed and a new flute for Alder, which he now carried slung like a sword across his back. All cost 15 vifaras, leaving them with 123 left.
"So we have, like, 50 left?"
Alder asked with a smile from ear to ear.
"We're basically rich now."
"Not exactly," Ed said.
This was the hardest part of the operation. He grabbed one of the bags and set it aside.
"Catalan's fee is 5 vifaras for each barrel."
He handed 20 coins to Catalan.
"Our cost per barrel is 4.5 coins."
He set aside 18 coins.
"We need 60 to pay for the Kaftar's monthly fee."
He set aside 60 coins. Alder paled, staring at the small group of coins that remained.
"You've got to be kidding me."
"Sadly, no," Ed said.
He took another 15 vifaras away, leaving only 10.
"These are so we make more barrels next time. This leaves us with 3 coins for each of us, and we still owe everyone else back in the haunt their wages."
Technically, he should have saved those 10 vifaras, but he suspected that Alder wouldn't survive that disappointment.
"No,"
whispered Alder.
"This can't be true."
He stared at his 3 pink coins.
"Tell me it isn't true, Kess."
"Sorry,"
Kess said.
"At least you're getting something this trip. I imagine Levy isn't going to be happy she missed out."
Catalan chuckled as she pocketed her money.
"It isn't so bad,"
she reassured the bard.
"Next time you'll bring twice as many barrels. And after that, well, by then you'll probably have the Brewer's Guild on your ass. But with Oscor and me helping you out, you'll probably be fine."
"Easy for you to say," Alder said, eyeing her bulging purse. "And I'm not so sure about trusting your definition of fine after you almost got me killed back there."
"It was all under control,"
Catalan said nonchalantly.
"Oscor's a softy. You saw all those junkies he helps out. Not really a cold-hearted killer, right?"
"Looked enough like a killer to me," said Alder. "If it hadn't been for Ed's bluff..."
He trailed off, shuddering.
"What bluff?"
asked Catalan.
"You know what his real profession is. A tad more dangerous than an adventurer, wouldn't you say?"
"It was enough of a bluff that it raised his charm by a point,"
Alder exclaimed. Ed chuckled.
"To be fair, that rank increase was long overdue," he said. "I've been using charm to deal with the haunt's issues for a while now."
"Be that as it may,"
Alder crossed his arms around his chest and shook his head.
"Oh, forget it. I'm sure I can get a good poem out of this adventure. Maybe a drinking song, even. I'll have to take a few artistic liberties."
"Now that's the spirit," Ed said.
Kess grabbed her ale mug and filled it from the jar in the middle of the table. Then she raised it in Ed's direction.
"A toast,"
she said.
"I owe you one, remember?"
"That's right," said Ed.
He raised his own mug in Kess's direction. Catalan and Alder did the same.
"To what shall we toast?" Alder asked.
"Oh, I know,"
said Kess.
"To the haunt. May it prosper long, and us with it."
"Yes," Ed thought. "May we. To the haunt!"
Kes barked a laugh as her hand slapped the table over and over. A reddish glow had spread across her face, and there was a puddle of spilled drink on her side of the table.
The uniform is completely ruined.